Hi, today's August 7th, 2022. I'm Todd Agasawara with my good friend John Westfall, and this is Mobile News Podcast 418. And I'm going to do a quick test before we get started. Currently, I'm on the Blue Yeti Nano mic that I've been using for the last couple of podcasts that replaced the full-size giant Blue Yeti. And I've been really happy with it. But what I'm going to do real quick is I am going to change my recording device temporarily, because I know it's going to come in a little soft, to the K23, which I badmouthed on the mini podcast last week because it did not work at all with a test setup I had last week. So I'm going to switch to the K23. Okay, this is a Nano.
Okay, I'm now on the Stador, S-T-A-D-O-R, K23. And John, am I probably a little softer right now?
Oh, well, tiny bit, but then you came... You're equaling out pretty well on my end. So,
oh, interesting.
I'm curious to see how it sounds on playback.
All right. So I'm a little bit nervous about recording fully on this. So I'll just say a few more words. And then
I am switching back to the Yeti Nano. Probably sounds a little loud to John. For some reason,
it did.
It bursts.
And the Yeti Nano sounded a little bit better. So,
I mean, I'm in the Yeti. You mean the K23?
Yeah. No, the K23, I don't know, sounded a little bit facier.
Oh, interesting. I don't know. Yeah. Any case, we are back on the Yeti Nano, and that was interesting because, you know, John, I did a while you were still on your super secret mission, I did a little mini podcast, and I tried to test five microphones, including the K23, but the K23 wouldn't record with Audacity, which I was recording directly into it. But I got a good set of samples from the other four microphones, including AirPods Pro and Yeti Nano, and I'm going to stick with the Yeti Nano. It just sounds the best to me.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are really soft, some of the earbuds I was using. At any rate, John is back. I want to thank Sterling Yee, who sat in two podcasts ago for Hawaii Techies number 4. So thank you, Sterling. That was a lot of fun to listen to your field trip to the... where is it? Fremont, California? I think it was Fremont, California, Tesla factory. So that was way fun. And welcoming back John. So John,
we're going to talk.
You are welcome. We'll talk a bit about your trip at the bottom of the podcast, because I think it's a longish title. Anyway, so the K23... Yes, the microphones work. I've actually been using them with Microsoft Teams for work. Normally, what do I do? Oh, normally, I use these Anker Soundcore Pros Q30, but these are over-the-head cans, and they are like disintegrating, and you have to like give blood and your firstborn and all kinds of stuff to get replacement cushions. So I haven't done that yet. And so I'm experimenting with the K23, which is way more comfortable, by the way, if you're sitting in an unair-conditioned room as I am in the middle of summer. So, okay, I'm using the K23 as my monitors right now to hear John, and I'm back to the Yeti Nano for the mic. I just want to mention a couple of things. John, I know you are a Raspberry Pi user. So
yes.
You've got the Raspberry Pi 4 processor.
I do, too.
It's in my Raspberry Pi 400, in fact, which is the only 4 I have. You will soon, well, they don't say how soon, but I guess soon, the next rev, you'll be able to use Fedora Linux as your Linux of choice. And I gotta say, you know, so Fedora is the non-commercial version of Red Hat, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
Hence, you know, Fedora hat. And I really, back in the day, 20 years ago, Fedora Linux was my, you know, Linux of choice, my distro of choice. And so... I'm okay with Raspberry Pi's version of Linux. It's fine. I haven't really used it enough to form a real strong opinion, but I really grew up on Fedora in terms of, you know, the early 2000s when I was really heavily doing this stuff. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what I was using for previous, maybe Slackware or something like that. But I'm really excited to get a chance, you know, when I'll have more free time next year.
Mm-hmm.
to play with this stuff. So that's kind of one of the things I'm looking forward to. The other thing I wanted to mention before we get into your topics, John, which really fascinate me, is I did get my Lenovo Chromebook Duet 5 in while you were on a super secret mission. And it's interesting. It is a detachable tablet. Not the first. You know, actually, Lenovo's Duet was the, well, maybe it wasn't the first, but first one I heard of, where the keyboard magnetically detaches and attaches to the display computer part.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a Prime Day sale, so I think I got it for like $300. Normally it's about $450 or something like that, list at least. And so I thought it was a pretty good deal. And I've been wanting a detachable tablet. It is huge. I have other 13-inch devices, but they're not tablets. This is the biggest tablet I've ever bought or used, for that matter. And so 13-inch tablet is huge versus a 13-inch, you know, in notebook form, it looks just perfectly fine, but it's really big and heavy. I did try to use it for doodling, and not so much that the Lenovo's bad, it's just that the pen is bad, in my opinion, or the way it works is bad, and the software really doesn't do, the applications I used didn't do like palm rejection and stuff, so it wasn't a good test, but I'll go find something else to try it with for my doodle experiment. And see if I can find something that works better than what I was using. I was using, I think, Infinite Painter, which is an excellent program. I use it on my iPad. And it's a great program, but it just, on a Chromebook, not so much. Even just trying to find where you save your files is like a mystery, you know, like a mystery
project. It is
project.
Amazing to me how many things, you know, just don't go through any sort of usability testing. And the simplest things on them are painful. And when you talk about just, you know, something that I consider pretty basic, the idea that you can find your files.
Yeah.
And it just really does make you wonder who is doing any kind of usability testing or if there's any usability testing going on.
Yeah.
I had a similar thing when I came back from my super secret mission, my Xbox One, which was 6 years old, died. It would not boot up. So I bought a new Xbox Series X so that I could continue gaming with the group that I game with regularly. Yep. And was logging into a video streaming app that will not be named. And instead of what you might expect, which all apps do these days, where you can go to a web page, log in with your credentials, and then just link it to your account so that you don't have to... on a gamepad, try to type in your password. No, it still wanted me to type in my username and password to authenticate when I set up this app. So again, who is doing this where they're not going, you know what, maybe we should do that fancy linking thing that people have been doing for 10 years now. Nah, people won't mind typing their long, complex password in on something keyboard. I'm sure that's no problem at all.
Their cryptographically strong password.
Yes, exactly. Which, when I looked at this password, admittedly, it is not cryptographically strong because I've had to type it in on a keypad before, and it's a pain to do. This time, I thankfully brought up the Xbox app on iOS and just did the remote keyboard and was able to paste it in. But
yeah.
So I guess I could make it stronger now. But still, really, why is this such a painful thing?
Well, you know, it's funny. Even when you do have a usability lab, John, mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember, but many, many, many years ago when you and I were Microsoft MVPs, we went on a tour of Microsoft's usability lab. And they were, you know, and we were like mobile devices, you know, the MVP. So they took us in and they happened to be testing like a pocket PC phone or something. And I remember a bunch of us looked at the usability testing and says, that doesn't tell you anything, you know, what they were doing. I mean, apparently their researchers believed it did, but from a external validity point of view, it was sort of like, I don't think that tells you anything, you know, except maybe tap counts. I think that was, you know, that we all agreed was a useful metric, but everything else is like, nah, not so much. And by the way,
tap counts, or you want something that's usable? That's crazy.
You know, but and of course, you know, you remember how long we took them to convince them they really needed a month view in their calendar.
Microsoft still seems to be convinced that nobody uses month view.
That's true. The new calendar add-on, free calendar component for Microsoft Teams for businesses, does not have a month view. You know, I think it only has a two-week view or something crazy like that, which is exactly what they did with the Pocket PC. They took away the month view, and we said, no, real people, we use them. But their usability testing didn't show that. But anyway, So the Chromebook 5, Duet 5, it's not a high-end device. You know what you can tell from the price? Like I said, I paid about $300. But it does have OLED display. And it's, I think, the first notebook I've owned that has OLED display. I don't think my new MacBook Air does, for example. Well, not new, 2021 MacBook Air M1. But and it's super bright. Speaker's a little soft, so I was kind of thinking I was using it to, you know, stand up in the kitchen to listen to stuff on a big screen, but might not be loud enough. I might have to put Bluetooth speakers in my kitchen just to or use headphones. But any case, other than that, it's kind of interesting. Having a really thin keyboard, it's almost uncomfortable. It's weird. And it's flexy enough that I can't use it on the angled, tilted cooling pad that I use for everything else. But I'll have more to say about it later. Some, you know, it's been out since late last year, I think, or early this year. So it's been out for a while. But I'll give it my, you know, I'm late to the game review. Maybe I'll start calling it that since I am no longer a pioneer buyer.
Late to the game reviews would be an interesting podcast for us to start. Not quite there, reviews.
We can review Windows Vista.
We can call it untimely information.
I like it.
Oh, you wanted this review last year? Oh, sorry. We didn't get around to it until now.
Yeah. Oh, boy. It's too bad my original Xbox is dead. I could review the original Xbox.
Yeah, original Xbox. Next week, we review the Palm M500, you know.
Yeah. You know, what happened to my Palm? I used to have a Palm somewhere, but anyway. I have a handspring somewhere.
Oh, anyway. That's good enough. I'll okay. Let it pass. I'll pull out my old StarTAC, and we'll do that too, you know.
My first phone was a Japanese company named Denso. Which is not a great name in the English-speaking language, but I think it comes from Denki, which I think is phone in Japanese. But right. In any case, you know, language issues. Okay, so while you are on your super-secret mission, you did a lot of super-secret traveling ideas, it sounds like.
I did, and one of the things that I've always struggled with when I travel and when I commute regularly is finding a bag that I like. We've talked about bag collections before.
Yes.
And this week, after getting back from my super secret mission, one of the bags that I had been looking at for a while was finally released. And it's just an interesting combination of technology and, I guess, what happens when you, you know, cross over between the tech space and the physical world. So, the bag that I'm talking about is a backpack from the YouTuber Linus Tech Tips, or the Linus Media Group, if you follow any of their channels. The aforementioned Linus, the person who started the whole channel and everything, through his merch shop, has developed this backpack that it appears a lot of time and thought has gone into in terms of usability. Talking about usability testing, you can watch videos where he discusses why each part of it is the way it is and how it was thought out and all those things that we sort of hope companies do, but companies don't always do. And what's more interesting about the way this works, or the way that he's kind of created this ecosystem, is that many YouTubers have a merch store. Most of them are silk screening, you know, t-shirts, or they use the same kind of promotional products that a lot of companies will brand with their own stuff. And they're basically selling to fans that want to show support by buying a, you know, a branded t-shirt or something like that. He actually has creative staff and people on staff designing products, which is a bit of a change to this whole formula. So I've bought his products before. They definitely are not, you know, the same thing that you would buy from most places. And he's pretty transparent about if they do source shirts or they source other things, you know, where do they get them from, those sorts of things. So that's a little bit different to begin with. So that's also why this backpack and the screwdriver that he is also developing are not, you know, just off-the-shelf products that you can grab. But what's even more interesting is that the reason that he's doing this, these rather expensive merchandise
They're not pulls, cheap.
The backpack is $250. It is not cheap. Although it should be noted that he's already sold about 18,000 of them by the counts on the website. So money is coming in. But his plan is to use the profits to run a independent testing lab for hardware. The idea that, and I've spoke to you about this before the show, you know, when we did our reviews as old timers back in the day before YouTube really took off, when we were writing reviews on web pages and blogs, you couldn't really test anything empirically. You know, you had your opinion of it of, you know, well, this Pocket PC doesn't seem to be as fast on Wi-Fi as my other one was, or these headphones sound a little bit too bassy compared to my other headphones, or maybe that's just me. But you couldn't actually say, you know, the bass gain on these headphones is different than the bass gain on these other headphones, and, you know, the manufacturer says that this gets 16 hours of battery life, and under controlled conditions it really does get 16 or something like that, or even this charger is a 60 watt charger and it actually charges at 60 watts. So the idea that as a YouTuber he is developing an actual testing lab is sort of a novel one. So I guess I am just interested in a lot of the way that this all interfaces, where I'm hoping that when I get my backpack, which I should get by mid-September, I'm hoping that it will be a good backpack, obviously. I was very impressed with the idea that he did not want to do pre-orders because he didn't want to promise a product that could potentially be vaporware. You know, developing a custom product is never an easy process, so it was very possible that something could have gone wrong and the product was never released. He didn't want to turn it into a Kickstarter or something like that where maybe the product was never going to come out. So what actually happened was they're all back orders at this point. If you place an order, and the webpage even tells you what waves of orders.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now.
Getting in through, you know, ocean freight from where it's being produced in Asia. So I don't know. I like the idea of the transparency, assuming it is transparency. I mean, it is the internet, so you never know what you can believe and you can't believe.
Could be a dog.
Could be a dog. You never know. But, you know, it's just an interesting fusion, I think, a real-world product for a virtual YouTube channel that might actually lead to testing of real-world products in a independent way, and you don't have to take the manufacturer's word for it.
So I did a back of a napkin calculation, and their waves are roughly 10,000 units, and they say they've shipped just shy of 40,000. That's $10 million.
Yeah. Well, and his
gross.
You know, every week he does host a live podcast that then you can listen to in a podcast feed. But if you've been listening to it, he's talked about the anxiety of ordering giant shipments these things. At one point he did offer a notification sign up for the backpack, and you can actually get on the notification sign up list for the screwdriver, which hasn't been released yet. And they had 60,000 people sign up for notifications. And so it was, well, how many of those do you assume are going to actually turn into conversions? And then you want this to actually be a product that you're selling for, you know, Christmas and into next year. So how many? And then of course they wanted to get it in the back to school season, which they weren't able to do because they added a AirTags pocket last minute to it that they figured people would want. And so I will say, assuming that it's accurate, the transparency that you get from a YouTuber that's used to podcasting is kind of interesting to see behind the scenes on these things.
Yeah. And I want to say, I'm looking at the product page right now and there are lots. I mean, I'm not even going to count them, but I'm going to say well over a dozen photos of, you know, the backpack in various states, open, closed, side, back, people wearing them. So it really gives you a good idea just from looking at photos. I guess he probably has a video about it too, but there's a size guide. Can you order different sizes? At any rate.
No, but I will also say one of the things they wanted to do was have real world reviews, which unfortunately their reviews are being filled with spam right now. So their customer service team is fighting them back. But up until Wednesday when they went live, the reviews were of actual backpack owners because they did a limited pop-up shop in their physical location so that they could actually sell about 200 backpacks and then have verified reviews of them before they went live.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting push to try to have a little bit more honesty in the reviews.
Yeah, and I got to say, you know, although $250 is more than I would pay these days for a backpack, you know, there was a time when I was traveling a lot that I would easily pay $250 for a backpack that A, was functional, and B, was durable. Because sometimes the two do not go together. Mm-hmm. You know, they're functional, but they last 6 months. But this looks pretty durable. I mean, they show a lot of the stitching and all that kind of stuff in the photos. So you get a real, you know, they have little arrows pointing to, you know, riveted lower strap and reinforced stitching and YKK zipper, you know. So, oh, it's got a little, yeah, it's pretty interesting. Water-resistant zippers. So pretty interesting stuff. Screwdriver pocket. Oh, for that screwdriver you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, really interesting. And as I said, you know, back in the day when I used to, like, I would buy a Tumi, which was going to be hundreds of dollars, but I knew it was going to last, like, pretty close to forever. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think I still have my Tumi, you know, 20-something years later. So, yeah, it pays to, well, you know, pay for a really high-quality product. It's pretty. I'm looking forward to your real-world reviews when you get it in, since you're a real-world traveler.
Definitely talk about it because I do plan on using it as my daily driver to work. One of the things that I'm planning this fall is to change my routine a bit in terms of fitness. So I'll be actually working out after work.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's going to have to hold, you know, gym stuff and a few other things. So I'll be curious to see how it works. And for those that do say that is a lot of money, there was a quote I heard this week from the magician duo Penn and Teller, one referring to the other. One was saying, you know, I want to buy this expensive product. Can we really afford it? And the other replied in a terse email, we do not economize on our tools. And so if you think about it, if you consider a backpack a tool for you to get your work done or manage your life, then you want to get something that'll work the way that you expect it to.
Well, and I got to tell you, if it, not so much for a daily, you know, trip to and from the office or something, but if you are traveling, as you often do, and you are running through an airport or bus stop or whatever, and you see a tear on your backpack's back, you know, strap, that is not a good feeling.
No, it is definitely not.
Yeah, and you really wish you had spent maybe a little bit more money on better stitching, which doesn't seem important when you're paying for a backpack, but it is super important. And, you know, shout out, I've got no relation to this company, but I've been buying very affordable luggage and backpacks and other kinds of things from Rick Steves, which is a travel company.
Mm-hmm.
And I've used them, you know, I used them to travel to, like, the UK a couple of times and when I was still traveling and various other places domestically in the US. And, you know, I did get a tear on one strap, but I wrote to them. They sent me another one. It wasn't like I couldn't afford to buy another one. It was only like $40, but it was real nice of them. So, you know, shout out to ricksteves.com. I basically started buying from them, by the way, to support the videos that they do on travel back, like, again, when I was traveling. So, and I'm looking at their luggage stuff now. Even though I don't really need it, there's some interesting stuff there.
Well, you keep saying that you're not going to be doing much next year, but I think you know, you might want to do some travel. You might want to go do some things, you know.
Oh, no. Let me tell you. So I live on Oahu in Hawaii, one of the major populated islands. And if one of the places I would go, because I have family and I like the island, is Maui. The TSA lines on Maui for a 20-minute trip. Okay, remember, it's about a 22-minute flight from Oahu to Maui. It's I think, the shortest commercial flight in the U.S. right now. It used to be San Jose to San Francisco. But it's the shortest commercial flight in the U.S., I think. And the 22-minute flight, you got to stand in line TSA for 2 to 3 hours. They are now putting up tents so people don't, like, have a heat stroke while they're waiting. It's outdoors, all outdoors. Right. And so, no, I'm not traveling anymore. ever. I let my TSA Global pre-check lapse last year and no intention of renewing it.
Well, you could always take a boat, I guess.
No. Okay. All right. So, this is a very focused topic, but it's an interesting one. I've lived with it. Go for it, John.
Well, yeah. So this is an interesting one because on my super secret mission, part of that was a vacation, and actually it was all a vacation. But the interesting thing about it was I often joke with people. They ask me why I have Verizon as my cell provider, mm-hmm. and I tell them, well, it's because Verizon works anywhere. And it's not exactly true because there are places that don't have coverage. And this last week I was at one. If you're on the beach on Orange Beach in Alabama, on the Alabama Gulf Shore, you will find that because of a combination of factors, A, mm-hmm. It's a beach, so there are not a lot of cell towers around there, and B, there are also a ton of construction. There's high rises going up, and it's a touristy area that is getting bigger and bigger. You just don't get very good cell coverage inside most buildings on any network, really, and that includes Verizon. So we had Wi-Fi at the house that we were renting, and that worked just fine, except for the one morning where the fiber optic line died and the tech had to come fix it. But it was interesting to be mostly offline. You're at the beach. Your phone was not going to get a reliable coverage. My Apple Watch could not get reliable coverage. I had to put them in airplane mode or else they would burn out the battery quite quickly. Or with my phone at the beach, I typically turn it off because otherwise it overheats as well. Because, beaches and sun and all that. Phones don't like that sort of thing. Yeah, summer stuff. Summer Views will be our new podcast,
There we go.
But if I had not had to do any work, I did actually have work that I had to keep doing while I was there. If I had to do no work, this would not have been a problem to be completely almost disconnected aside from Wi-Fi at the house. But the work was a little annoying in that I had to make sure that I was doing things like downloading files to be able to use them offline, that sort of thing. But what it really was interesting to watch was some of the younger members of my extended family on my wife's side. They are very much connected to their phones on a very frequent basis. And the idea that they couldn't make phone calls as frequently as they wanted to, or they couldn't text on the beach or things like that really
post Instagram
them off. Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I think it's not necessarily a bad thing on vacation to be disconnected from the world. I think maybe that's a good thing in some ways. But, man, it is changing how people think about vacation because for some people, documenting that and putting it out there to the world are extremely important things. And so when you don't have that connection, they can't document it to the extent they would love to.
Well, it's funny, John, because I am old enough that I remember going to presentations by people who essentially, these were professionals like anthropologists and stuff, but they would do a slideshow for a group of people and talk about, a visit to some place they went that's for most of us might be considered exotic. And we would all gather in a darkened room and look at their photos and, thinking back as like, it's Instagram. It's analog Instagram.
It really is. And it is kind of funny to think about from the perspective of, what you do. But you're right. I remember analog, slide decks and things like that. And the old joke, if you turn on pretty much any sitcom from the, the 80s, 90s, you've got the joke about, so-and-so's making us watch their vacation photos or something like that. Now we all want to see each other's vacation photos, I guess.
Instantly.
Instantly. I guess that was always it. Maybe we just didn't realize. It wasn't that people didn't want to watch your photos. They just didn't want to wait to watch your photos. They wanted it to be immediate. So it wasn't that you were torturing people. You just didn't give them the instant gratification they craved.
Right. It's not they didn't. Nobody wants to sit down for an hour to do anything anymore, including YouTube videos. And they want to look at a clip. I hate those video clips on Instagram. I want to see a photo. But at any rate, they want to see a 30-second video clip. They want to see a nice photo and then move on to the next thing in life. By the way, I'm looking at, you know, I had no idea where Orange Beach is. I mean, I know where Alabama is, but it is literally a stone's throw away from Florida. I mean, I'm looking at the map and, you know, with good arm, you could do it.
One of my brother-in-laws, in an effort to avoid a toll road, actually ended up in Florida. Uh-huh. But yeah, the Gulf Coast, if you've never been on it, from basically, you know, Biloxi, Mississippi, all the way over to Destin, Florida, Fort Navarre Beach, that sort of area. Very nice beaches. Some areas are more touristy than other areas, but they're all pretty quick to get around. The only problem is you have to go through Mobile, Alabama, which is a royal pain traffic-wise. Oh. I-10 and Mobile, it can be very dicey to get through there in an easy way. And it's funny because there is US 98, which runs parallel, and if you use something like Google Maps that will dynamically reroute you, it will definitely reroute you on and off of I-10 to try to avoid things.
Interesting.
Which I guess is nice.
Yeah, and I have never been, except for a very brief visit, and I don't even know if you would consider it really a Gulf Coast visit, but I was in Tampa Clearwater on a business trip many, 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 many years ago, but that's my only visit to that side of the Gulf, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoy your travels, by the way, John, because you go to places I've never been to and will never go, and it's like, oh, those are really nice. That's pretty interesting, you know.
Well, and you live in a place that I would visit, but I'm just getting around to it. I'm also trying to convince my wife to fly. You know, she's not a big fan of aircraft. So, some point, if I can convince that, then we may end up, I might come actually see where you're at, because many people want to come see where you're at.
Yes, please do. Please do. We encourage that. We kind of depend on it.
Just a slight thing that you want to have happen, you know.
But, you know, it's really interesting because as an older person, I grew up disconnected, right? The connected world to me was pretty much a telephone. And in fact, I am so old. I remember when my dad was in, when my dad was in Vietnam, during the Vietnam War, we went to go live with my grandparents in Maui. They had what's called a party line. I don't even know if you know what that is, mm-hmm. John. But that means, basically, for those of you who have no idea what I'm talking about, it is not literally a line where you have parties, which
no.
You know, there are, but
it
was
be
a
nice.
It was a shared telephone number among several households, disconnected homes, not even a condo or anything. This is like standalone individual homes, and the phone would ring, or you'd make a call, and basically the line for multiple households would be tied up during that. And if you picked up a phone when somebody was talking in a different household, you could hear what they were saying, you know, without any electronic spy devices, because that's just the way it worked. So, you know, I have grown up in very limited communications. I have lived numerous places in my life where we didn't even get a decent television signal. In fact, in the Bay Area across from San Francisco, I lived in an area that was not part of a national park. And it was so remote that we didn't have live television signals. And it still doesn't have cell coverage when I last visited a number of years ago. And so we actually had the first cable system, I think. The Army, you know, brought in a cable they put an antenna on the mountain and brought cable down so we could watch like two channels. I think they gave us two channels. And in part of the Big Island where I lived in another national park, in Volcanoes National Park, we had one channel. And it didn't carry Star Trek, so I was devastated.
Ah, well, that is very annoying.
Yeah. And I remember, traveling to China in 1995. And not only I don't know if they had cell signal, probably not, because I didn't have a cell phone. So I had no way to test it, you know. I carried a HP 95 LX with me, I think. That was my mobile computing device, and I had no fear of the Chinese hacking me or anything like that. Because unless they had physical access to it, there was no way to hack it. But limited cell signal. In fact, my home that I live in now, years ago, I could not get AT&T cell coverage here. I had to go walk 25 feet outside of my home to get cell coverage, which is why I had other carriers. I had Verizon, T-Mobile, AT&T, so people could actually reach me when I was at home. But yeah, it is an interesting problem.
It is, and it is when, especially, there is no option. I mean, among all of us there at the house, we had AT&T, T-Mobile, and Verizon phones, and no one had decent coverage in the building. So, or even outside the building. So, those places still exist.
Well, and in fact, you know, if you travel outside the U.S. with an American carrier and you're roaming, it's even more interesting. I know in the U.K., I went with my Google Fi phone, and you know, which uses T-Mobile U.K. for coverage. And it was pretty good in England. But in Scotland, it was really spotty. I mean, and I don't mean like way out in the country. I'm talking Edinburgh, you know, which is a big city. There are spots where I would walk three blocks and have no signal on T-Mobile UK. And then I would walk, you know, back to an area and I'd have signal. My daughter, by the way, who was doing a study abroad, had a Vodafone SIM in her phone, in her iPhone. And it worked great. So I guess the difference was Vodafone has, like Verizon, things that start with V, has had much better coverage than my T-Mobile UK. And in fact, I think I've told you the story. The day, so I landed and I was waiting for my daughter to come in from, she was at like Harry Potter Lands, wherever that is in the UK. And so she was coming in by bus and I went over, I was walking over to go greet her and bring her back to the hotel that we were going to stay at. And T-Mobile UK had a citywide outage in London. And so I'm like, and I don't know how to get there without a GPS. Because, you know, I'm not, I wasn't smart enough to bring a paper map. But fortunately, the hotel there provided a free cell phone with data.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. And so I used that to, you know, wander around because it, you know, brought Google Maps. It was an Android phone, brought Google Maps up on it, and it was, got me to the... bus station or train station? I think it was a bus station, and was able to pick up my daughter successfully. So, yeah, limited coverage is an interesting thing. Oh, and in the Isle of Skye, which is the northwest tip of Scotland, I had nothing. and thank goodness that little hotel we were staying at had Wi-Fi. And T-Mobile or Google Fi or T-Mobile had just started, you know, voice over Wi-Fi kind of thing, which I had enabled. And it was a good thing because I got a job offer at that point. And they said, hey, can you come in and sign papers? And I said, not right now. I'm kind of in Scotland. And so is it okay if I come in next week? I said, oh, yeah, that's fine. But anyway. Yeah, limited coverage. It's people who grew up without cell phones have a very different view. I mean, I'm as addicted to my phone as anybody else, as you know, John, from, you know, knowing me all these years. But it is the disconnected lifestyle is a very interesting one. And you don't really know what you don't have until you get a cell phone. And then it's like, wow. I mean, if you can imagine traveling without a phone. You have to go find a payphone to go tell somebody, you know, hey, I'm here. I mean, like when I went away to grad school, there were no cell phones. And so, you know, I had to find a payphone. And I think I could call collect to my parents and say, hey, I made it to, you know, wherever. I'm here. I'm alive. And I'll talk to you later. Maybe next month because the permanent charges are crazy.
Well, and I would remind people because there is this. Often this idea of nostalgia of, you know, no one should be dependent on their cell phone. We should go back to the way it was. People love to think the good old days were good, and they really weren't. But, you know,
they weren't.
The thing that I remind people is that if I could go back to 1995 or 1985 or something like that, maybe I would because, yes, there was some aspects of that life that were, you know, less frenetic and less crazy and all that. The problem is, I can't do that today by just ditching my cell phone.
No.
Because the entire world that was around me to do those tasks is gone. Payphones are gone. If I go to a gas station and I look for a map, I might not find a map at that gas station for the area I'm in.
That's a good point.
If I want to pick up a newspaper to see what's going on in the world around me, finding a newsstand outside of a major city is difficult. You know, maybe a gas station might have the newspaper. Maybe they won't, because the local newspaper in that town may have folded already and no longer exists. So if you're sitting there going, well, these kids today should just try living like we did and they wouldn't have anxiety and they wouldn't have all these other things, they can't. Because it literally is impossible to go back and, you know, engage in the world for a week the way you would have in 1985 or 1995. The world changed.
Yeah. And in fact, you know, and speaking of 1995, so that was a year I was in China for a couple of weeks with my wife. And like I said, we didn't have cell phones at all at that point. So that was not a big deal. But the other thing I discovered is that, especially in a communist country, I guess, is Western information is hard to come by. There were no Western newspapers that I could find. In fact, I was told we were going to stay at later in that trip, we were at a hotel that actually had USA Today, and I was kind of thrilled because I had not seen any news from outside of China, and I don't speak Mandarin, so I really didn't have any news. Yeah. I'm going to retract that statement just slightly. There was one English language programming we could find everywhere in China, and that was Entertainment Tonight.
So if it was important enough to be on ET, you were able to watch it.
That's right, right. Yeah. So, you know, entertainment news, I was up to date. Everything else in the world, not a clue. It was, you talk about, okay, fine, you don't have TV, go read a paper. Yeah, if you read Mandarin, maybe. You know? Yeah. But I don't. So that was not real helpful. I was just trying to think, you know, that there are still places, you know, we in Hawaii, There's still lots of, well, I shouldn't say, I haven't looked at the maps lately, but there were, as of a couple of years ago, you know, still a lot of places in the island chain, in the populated parts that have limited cell phone coverage. And I recall John, if you ever go to Maui, which I do recommend, despite the 3-hour TSA check-in line, go get TSA pre, then it's much faster, by the way. I would if I were still traveling. But if you go to Maui, and I had a business trip I had to go to years ago, and we were meeting some folks in Hana, which is on the east tip of the Maui Island, which is about 50 miles from the airport. And they said, hey, let us know when you're getting close, and we'll make sure to greet you, and, you know, we'll set, you know, come over to here, and we'll meet, and so forth and so on. And I said, fine. And he says, oh, wait. Before I drop you off on the phone, let me tell you where you can call me from. I go, huh? So it says, as you're driving, you will come to this place and you will need to make a left turn towards the ocean and walk to the cliff. And this is a very high cliff, by the way. Walk to the end of the cliff and you will be able to make a phone call from there. And sure enough, I had no cell signal at all. Although, you know, I kind of like peeking at my phone every now and then. But I made that turn, that sharp left turn, and walked to the end of the cliff and, you know, tried not to fall off. And sure enough, I got a signal and I made a call. Says, hey, we're here and we'll be there in like, you know, 10 minutes or whatever. And they said, okay, thank you. We'll meet you at the, you know, at this building. I said, okay, great.
But only I'm brave glad can make phone calls.
I'm glad they made me make that turn, because that view was just spectacular. I mean, just gorgeous. And I later looked it up. I think the way that cell phone call was completed was, you know, again, we're on islands, and I think the cell tower I was using was on the Big Island of Hawaii. And so I was connecting to a tower on a different island, which was then calling back to a tower in Hana. Which is kind of blocked by some mountains and stuff between those two points that I was standing and they were living. And so that's, you know, that's just a few years ago. That's like 6-7 years ago, maybe.
What you don't realize is that the person that's responsible for that was standing on that cliff one day going, this is a heck of a view. I got to call someone. Huh, I don't get coverage here. I better go fix that. And they just happened to, you know, have enough sway over the towers on the Big Island. And they just, you know. I need coverage on this particular spot, you know, to be able to call someone and tell them how wonderful it is.
Indeed. Anyway, that is it, unless you got anything else, John.
And I'm good for the week.
All righty. So MobileViews Podcast 418 is in the can, and glad to have John back.